Are you ready to ignite your business and achieve your full potential? Welcome to Building Success Stories, the podcast that empowers entrepreneurs and business leaders. I'm Ann Donnelly, and I've spent over four decades in the business world. I've witnessed the power of perseverance, innovation, and strategic thinking firsthand. We'll explore the stories of successful entrepreneurs and business leaders, and we'll delve into the practical strategies and mindset shifts that can propel your business to new heights. Get ready to be inspired and motivated to take your business to the next level. I'm here with Johanna Von Geldern, the owner of Mint Farm to Table Restaurant in Glens Falls, and she has some exciting new developments coming up. But first, why don't you tell us about like how you got started in this business?
Well, I've always been fascinated by the connection between diet, food, and health. My first experience was when I was 13, and my mom became very ill. And we happened to know through my uncle, who did a lot of different studying around the world and different communities and different ways of living and existing. He happened to be living in a Mishio-Kushi community of macrobiotic cooking and lifestyle in Boston at the time when my mom was diagnosed with this serious illness. And so he invited her to come and do a consultation with a macrobiotic, basically, master. And so we drove to Boston, and they look at your fingernails, your skin, eyes, they have all these
probably
ways of, you know, looking at the outside of your body, being able to tell what's wrong with the internal organs. And so they prescribed a specific diet for her. And for 3 years, our family went into this dive of all vegan diet, the macrobiotic base of like the miso bacteria, basically. It's different from the dairy diet. It's traditional in America. And so, of course, I hated it. I was very rebellious, you know, when I was 13. My friends were eating Jiffy white bread Wonder sandwiches, you know, and here I was eating like gross miso soup with seaweed in it. And at that time, you couldn't even get whole wheat bread in the grocery stores. The Big M just had like white bread. Right. And so I just learned very early on, because my mom, at the end of the 3 years, after all of the, you know, the restrictive dieting and all that I lived with, she got rid of all of our polyester clothing. We went to cotton. She started meditating every day. She started doing yoga every day. It was a whole life transformation that I watched her do, as I observed as a child. And at the end of the 3 years, she completely healed herself.
Wow.
She had grapefruit-sized tumors, cystic fibroids attached to her spine. She couldn't get out of bed. And the medical doctor community in America was saying that she had to have this severe surgery, that there was no guarantee it was going to even enable her to walk without pain. That's why we dove into this other healing.
Yeah.
And so I learned really early on that there's something to the food that we're eating and our bodies and our health. And so I've always been fascinated with, you know, just staying healthy. My grandmother lived to be 97. We lived at a big farm when I was little, 350 acres. And we had huge gardens. We had a 2-acre sweet corn field. We had another half acre each, huge gardens with every kind of vegetable you can imagine, including like kohlrabi, which no one had even heard of at that time. And so we did a lot of just everything was cooked from scratch. And that's how I grew up. But we're missing the gourmet element of it when I was a child. So I couldn't wait to get out of there and go adventuring and exploring. I ended up living in a different culture in Mexico when I was 17. So I got a true exposure to like a whole different culture of food. And we would drive to the Tetra area and they were making hot out of these like stone ovens right there in this, you know, this little outdoor building, and wrapping it in newspaper, like paper packaging, a huge stack of hot tortillas right off the press. And taking those home, and that's what we would have for dinner. So I just got like a whole different exposure to just different ways of sourcing food and different ways of cooking food and different times of the day of eating. And I've just always been fascinated by food. It wasn't until I was really an adult, my 40s, when I started my teaching career and everything, that I truly dove into the gourmet aspect of food.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot of international travel with my partner at the time, and we ate at really nice places and had delicious food that was presented mostly. And so the first restaurant was in Greenwich, New York. We had a year-round farmer's market right next door to us. That was just a tiny little restaurant that eight tables, like wine bar. But my first chef lived off the grid in the Cambridge community. It was surrounded by all the Washington County farms, and parents were really involved in that community, connected to all the farmers and the food co-op there. And so she was trained on the West Coast. She had the gourmet training and the palate for food, flavoring, layering food, and cooking with a really healthy desire, you know, to like incorporate fresh, healthy food and make it gourmet without all the heavy oils, you know, the chemicals, things like that.
Yeah.
A lot of gourmet includes like, and also we both were on the same page right in the beginning about animal suffering, and having been like a studier of quantum physics and how anything, everything's energy. For me, going into this and wanting to purchase food and, you know, source food, I wanted to make sure that our food was being sourced ethically, and that those animals were not only being raised with like grass, pasture, with natural like surroundings, but having a happy life. So, and like, so that's where the quantum physics piece comes in, that, you know, energy that that animal is living with. They're living a happy, normal animal life out in the field with, you know, babies and partners and friends. And, you know, the energy that you're going to take into your body when you consume that animal is going to be different than an animal that lived in a tiny cage suffering its entire life and that just, you know, destroyed.
Right.
You know, stressed. And one of the first beef farmers that I worked with when I was back at the original restaurant, they were so in tune with their own animals. They had a special breed of animal that was a European breed of cow. And she was a woman farmer. She made sure that when her cows were processed, they traveled the shortest distance because they know what's happening. They can sense it. And every minute that they stay in a transition of stress or trauma, it's affecting their body and how that is going to, you know,
benefit you,
our
person. Yeah.
Yes. And so I love that she taught me that. And I love that she was so in tune with her animals. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're doing. Like the whole thing is about teaching people that, you know, yeah, it's important to know where your food is coming from. It's great if you can have a relationship with the farms or the artisans who are crafting the food, and that a partnership between, you know, the purchaser and the, you know, is really a special relationship. It's a symbiotic relationship that I think translates into the plate or onto the plate for us here at the restaurant. And that's why people love our food. So my goal is to have a safe space for employees who are sort of tenderhearted, giving people that are really, they have a true heart for service. So that's who I look for when I hire people. And we just want to be able to offer more of our delicious food to more people. And so opportunity came up to open a second restaurant, which would anchor the southern part of the capital region, and once we also sort of anchor in the northern part of the capital region. That allows us from Saratoga North or Saratoga South to like offer our food to thousands more people. That really is the goal, is to just, I guess, get the philosophy out that, you know, of how it's so important not to have animals suffering. It's so important not to be consuming food that's full of chemicals, preservatives, and, you know, it's basically been tainted by chemicals and processing. It's just better for us. We feel better when we eat it. I know that it's working because I hear people all the time comment like, that was a delicious meal, but I don't feel like overly full. I don't feel like, typically when I eat out, a lot of times I leave my stomach feeling bloated, and so I feel like there's something to that, you know, and we're just going to keep going forward with, you know, trying to be able to offer our food to more people. That's basically, and also continue supporting the farmers and the artisans that we work with, and hopefully finding even more farmers and artisans, like, you know, closer to the other location that possibly we can create partnerships with.
So where is the other location?
It's 5 Vista Boulevard in Slingerlands. It's an old location, which was there for 12 years, of Garden Bistro 24. It's a beautiful building. It's slightly larger than this building, but it's got a very similar layout, which is kind of interesting. It has a huge bar room. First walk in, big, beautiful bar. And then it has a dining room adjacent to that, just like ours. The dining room is to the right of the bar. And then on the other side of that is a huge patio. It's even, it's the largest patio in that area, I've been told, outdoors.
Yeah.
So I guess it's something to really look forward to for the farm season.
Yeah, sounds ideal.
Yeah, really.
So how's it progressing then, opening up there? Do you have an ETA?
Well, we're going to try to, our goal is like after we deal with Valentine's Day here, which is one of our biggest commitments to, you know, just prepping for that, making sure that goes smoothly. Once my staff has kind of got that tucked away, right after that, we're going to just hopefully, you know, just sort some soft opening, start inviting friends and family and like regular customers, people on our mailing list, you know, just start slowly. Don't put it on Google yet. And just make sure that our POS system, it's the whole POS system. We're switching over this location and that location to a new POS system that will incorporate both locations. So that's a big project. We're working on that. We're working on the signage, we're working on all the licensing. I haven't really started working on staffing. We're actually keeping a lot of the staff from Garden Bistro 24. So the chefs there will work under my chef. My kitchen manager, ordering manager will work at both places. My daughter, who is partners, owner, she'll continue payroll for both. The bar program for both. And hopefully March 1st will be it. That's going to be when we're officially open there.
And are you going to keep it very similar menu-wise and all to here?
Exactly.
Yeah. It'll also be called Mint.
It's going to also be called Mint. So it'll be Mint in Glens Falls, Mint in Slingerlands, which at first I thought was a little weird. But when you think about the chain restaurants, they have the same name no matter where they are. So, you know, not that I want to be in the same boat as a chain restaurant, but
no,
you know,
but you've built the reputation. Yeah. So
it's okay to have the same name.
Something.
Yeah. So, and that, yeah, it'll be Mint here, Mint there. It'll be the same menus. So we currently have dinner menu, a lunch menu, and a brunch menu, and then various special menus throughout the year. So they will be the same at both locations. Our cocktail list will be the same. Our elixir, non-alcoholic drinks will be the same. Wine, beer, everything will just, it'll just mirror.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Now, what you typically see in restaurant business, like I've seen some firsthand, but also what you see in the dramas about restaurants is a very stressful kind of atmosphere, but you seem to be the opposite of that. How do you maintain that? But you said picking staff that fit.
I think I tend to be such an open person. I want to give everyone a chance, but I've learned that I have to pay more attention to my intuition when I'm interviewing people, and I just have to, you know, it has to be like, if it's not a definite yes, it has to be a no. Because, you know, for instance, like, I'm really big on cleaning. And, you know, like, if someone's not a natural clean person, you can't train them to be a clean person. So it just has to be just finding those people that really align with our vision, align with our philosophy. And I don't want to have to fight people that work for me that I'm paying. I don't want to have to battle with them to buy into our philosophy. I want them to be on board with our philosophy and what we're trying to accomplish, what we're trying to provide to the communities, like from day one. So that's why I've really learned a lot.
And how easy has it been, though, finding the right people? Because that's a big ask.
It is.
Yeah.
You know,
especially in this industry.
It really is. You know, and it's, I think, what I'm trying to do also is create a safe space. Like, that was like my very first chef, Helen. She's a very soft, gentle energy. She is an amazing talent, hardworking, really dedicated. And so the two of us together, we were sort of able to create that together. And, you know, we would like talk, we would, you know, consult with each other. And what do you think about this person? Well, I noticed this and I noticed that. And, you know, so we, that's where it started. And I still do that with my team now. You know, I have a core group of team members. I interviewed someone recently that was great on paper. And I met her in person and I got a little nervous from her energy. Her energy was a little bit, you know, too domineering almost. When I consulted with my staff after the interview, I said, what's your opinion? What's your opinion? What's your opinion? And all three said no.
Yeah.
Even though on paper, it seemed like
they're
tired. So it's just more the feeling of the person.
Yeah.
The energy, it doesn't align with what we're trying to do.
That's important when you're dealing with customers, that it's a continuous vibe throughout the whole, from booking to coming in to paying the bill.
Yeah. That's like where I am as the leader, everything that I do is coming from my empathic understanding of what I would want. If I was coming, spending my hard-earned money at this restaurant, at this business, what are the things that are going to make me happy? What are the things that are going to upset me? And then I just try to train everybody to just have everybody have the most pleasing experience that we can possibly provide, you know? And like you said, like from the hostess, like I've been to places where the hostess is on their phone chewing gum and ignoring you when you're standing right in front of them and purposely not looking up at you. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing that is just not tolerated. I just don't want that kind of energy in any of my businesses. I don't want to be around that energy.
Yeah.
So
that's exciting. So are there any other, like, I would imagine that sourcing these kinds of ingredients on scale is not easy.
It's not. And so that's what kind of throws my payroll numbers, my budget numbers a little bit out of whack compared to other restaurants, which is one of the reasons why I'm not making a ton of money doing this. This is basically a passion project for me. I just need to have enough money to sustain myself and live comfortably. But
ability to source ingredients.
So that's why one of the things I learned the hard way, like going through this for 10 years now, when we started Mint here in Glens Falls, I decided that we needed to have a specific person that was hired as an ordering manager, because there, with this business model, there are so many different accounts. There's so many different farmers. All the farmers, like they communicate with you in different styles, different ways, some really casual, some like online.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be able to maintain their communication style and manage it yourself according to your accounting records and everything. Establish those relationships, build those relationships, maintain those relationships. And it's a lot to keep track of. And so you were constantly also having to like price things out, because in this industry, a lot of the purveyors, we work with a couple of big purveyors. We work with Baldor, we work with Black River. And typically, like when you're getting mass amounts of things, there's a lot of error involved. So you just have to constantly be on top of it and checking your receipts. And that requires a very specific person. And my chef is busy, you know, training. He's busy cooking. He's busy, like, you know, finding new recipes, new ways to surprise and delight, you know, our palates. And so that's what I want him to focus on. He has a family. He has children. My ordering manager also, she has a family. She has children. So I want them to have lives. That's
where they can focus on the specific, yes, very important task.
Exactly. And so, and that's one of the things that I want, you know, I'm sure a lot of people have seen the Bear or have heard about the Bear program.
Watching it last night. Very stressful watching it. Even.
And a lot of it really truly is that harsh, you know, and rough. And I don't want that energy going into our food. I don't want it in the kitchen at all. And I've hired people that have that sort of energy and mentality and temperament. And you can't have them. You can't keep them. Not if you're trying to build just like a kitchen culture that is just, you know, has much more professional level, softer energy, kinder, you know, we communicate with each other. Like, for instance, a lot of restaurants, if the server makes an error, they go back to the kitchen and say, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to fire that, or I meant to order the char, not the crab cake. Can you fix it for me? If the kitchen, you know, has a negative attitude towards the server, makes the server feel bad or guilty, then the front of the house, we're not going to feel comfortable coming back and communicating to the back of the house. And if the back of the house makes a mistake, you know, and the front of the house is upset about it or acting out or like saying to the customer, well, the kitchen screwed up, that's not the energy we want.
Right.
We want everyone working on the same team. The goal for all of us is to create a successful business and to give our customers a great experience. That's number one. That has to be, like, for everyone working here, that's our goal.
Mm-hmm.
No matter if you're front of house, back of house, if the server makes a mistake, if the kitchen wants to be her partner and help her fix it, that's going to get the customers a better experience. It's not a tit for tat. It's we're all working together.
Exactly. For the benefit of your customers.
Exactly.
One thing that surprised me is how beautiful it is in here, the decor. Because I thought it was going to be more farmhousey,
Yeah.
And it's not, it's fine restaurant decor. It's beautiful. The paintings and everything. Like I said, I had my birthday brunch here and I'd never been in here before. And I was like, this is perfect. Everything about it was just beautifully done. And the way the food is served and everything.
So that comes from my international travel and just eating at really nice restaurants. So there's so many elements that go into creating a great experience. And if you're sitting in a restaurant with dirty carpet and you're eating a gourmet filet, it's not going to have the same joy, you know, because your dirty carpet's going to be distracting me from my experience. So, you know, of course, it's not perfect. And, you know, it's a tight budget in this industry. So you can't necessarily afford to just constantly replacing things. And you have to be smart about how you're spending your
good quality.
Yeah. So, but that is a huge component of a successful, you know, dining experience, is having beauty around you and plants and life, stone and brick and wood,
mm-hmm.
gold and metal and all those, and nice lighting, like all those things.
Yeah. Matter. I'm a big lighting person
too. So, that I give credit to my daughter. She's my bar manager, basically. She's my payroll and all those things. She does the craft cocktail menu. She helped us open this and hired a couple of designers. I had vision boards, like created the vibe I wanted. And these very expensive sort of hoity-toity, you know, designers, the stuff they were sending me back as examples looked like just totally, just completely off base. It had nothing to do with anything I had described or shown them. So when I showed her the stuff they sent me, she was like, ugh, you know, like, Mom, we can do a better job ourselves.
That's so fun.
You and I do it. And we did.
Yeah.
So that's
amazing. It is. Definitely.
And also, Peter Hoffman is the landlord. He definitely helped us. He loves antiques. And he owned a restaurant himself before he, you know, went into real estate with
Meals.
Yeah. Before all of that, he owned a huge restaurant. And so some of the antiques that you see, a lot of the design, the cute, interesting add-ons, like the antique chalkboards, this antique, like, frosted glass.
Mm-hmm.
Old antique.
Oh, that's real frosted glass?
Yes.
Just a decal?
It's an antique. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And these antique German globes, there's 10 of them that exist in the world.
We have
the 10. They're so
unique. They're very different, yeah.
And that huge mirror, everybody asks us about that beautiful mirror over the bar that came from one of his storage rooms in one of his basements. And that was my daughter, teaching out. She saw that peeking out, the corner was peeking out from behind a pile of dusty junk. And she just knew that we had to have it as our backup bar piece. She was so right. And when the guys brought it over on the back of the truck, they held it up and they said, are you sure you want this whole thing? And I was like, I don't know. But when we brought it in, I was like, are we going to paint it? Are we going to fix it? The chips are things. She said, no, we're going to leave it exactly like that. And as soon as it went up against that beautiful green tile, it was like, it just all came together. Like, it was amazing. And she had that.
It's meant to be.
She and Peter Hoffman, they had that. I have, like, in my head, I have what I want and the vibe I want to create. The two of them have the ability to bring it to life in 3D. So that's what was a great partnership.
That is a good partnership. Definitely something that is rare too, though. So it's good that you found.
Yeah, and these baguettes were a great find too. They came out of the Capitol building in Albany. So there's a restaurant where the governor has a lot of meetings, and this was in that restaurant. So many governors over the last 100 years, because these are over 100 years old. Yep, there's energy in these baguettes. So that's another cool thing.
So it seems like there's a lot of stories
behind
everything here,
yeah,
which just makes it nice.
Yeah. And then as far as the paintings, you mentioned the paintings, that's Susan Vidal. She's a retired high school teacher. And when she retired, she started painting. And she is absolutely amazing. And we are basically her gallery. All the paintings here are for sale. We don't deal with any of that. We just let people work with her. They can email her if they like a painting of hers. She takes it from there. But we get to look at these beautiful pictures and enjoy them. We're so blessed to work with her. So she's going to work with us on a new location as well.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Good
luck with the new space. I can't wait to go check it out.
I know. I can't wait for it to open.
Thank you for joining me in this episode of Building Success Stories. Are you ready to take your business to the next level? I've got you covered. Visit my website, AnnDonnellySuccessStories.com, to access additional resources and sign up for my newsletter. And to work with me directly, visit AnnDonnelly.com to learn more about my services as a fractional COO and business consultant. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform and never miss an episode. Until next time, keep building your success story.